strive for. More liberty. Lift yourself upon your feet. Let's get it on. We've been fooling around, not free, for much too long. It isn't hard to see.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Good morning, Portland. You're tuned into Pacific Underground, and guess what? We're less than 2 weeks away from our local elections here in Portland, so today we are having a very special episode, or regular episode, whatever you want to call it, because you are tuned in here on your normal fourth Fridays from 11 to 12 to listen to Pacific Underground, your only show west of the Mississippi for Asians and Pacific Islanders here on the radio. So here in studio, I am joined with Brandon Cruz from Apano. Apano? Brandon Cruz, welcome to Pacific Underground.
Thank you. As Jenna mentioned, my name is Brandon, and I am here with APANO, which is the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. And we're a statewide nonprofit organization that works with Asians and Pacific Islanders to develop a sense of civic engagement, and we work on a number of social justice issues by organizing our communities, and we really try to empower the voices of our communities.
Yeah, and if you are unfamiliar with APANO, you probably have noticed them here in town. They're out there on Southeast 82nd, and they're the organization that is building that new building there over on Division and 82nd. It's very exciting to see the new building going up. There's so much happening over at APANO these days. And so, Bran, we're very excited to have you in here because one thing that APANO does, amongst the many things that APANO does here in Oregon, is to bring us all the info we need for our elections, because it is so important that those of us in the API community vote. I mean, nationwide, but here, especially in Portland, we're such a small community, and we really need to make sure that we have our voices heard. And so APANO has come out with a voter guide. I got my voter guide right here. It's great. Mine is in English, but your voter guide comes out in so many languages. It's in Russian, Tagalog, Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, Chinese. So APANO is there to definitely spread the word. So Brandon, why don't you let us know, I noticed that your official title on your email says Vote Fellow. So what is Vote? What is it that APANO is doing to get out there to help spread the word about the elections this year?
Yeah, so a big part of my role in APANO, I'm essentially part of the field team, and what we do is every week we are out there talking to voters, letting them become informed, and trying to get them to vote in favor of the ballot measures that we are actually endorsing, whether that's a no or a yes, but those all speak true to our community values and how we feel as a community of Asians and Pacific Islanders that we need to defend, especially the most vulnerable parts of our communities.
So let's just get right into the voter guide. Let's see, very pretty cover. I will say it was really sucked in, but I was like, wow, look at that, that's pretty. Because I have to say, some of the voter guides from the city are like, you know, from like the Democratic parties and stuff. Not so great. Also, I was checking out the Democratic voter guide, only in one other language.
Yeah.
Only in one other language.
Yeah, that's a big part of what APANO does, is we try to meet our communities where they are, and by providing in-language assistance, that's one of the ways that we do that. And we also talk to our voters through in language when we go to doors and knock on doors, and also through our phone banks, which is pretty unique as well.
So what is the importance of speaking to people in their language?
Yeah, so the biggest importance of that is when people see and recognize that somebody who's familiar, who looks familiar and sounds familiar, they actually are a lot more trusting and willing to engage in conversations rather than if a stranger who has nothing in common with them were to come to their door or call their phone. They're a lot more open and willing to hear what you have to say.
That's so true. I just remember growing up, I have one parent who is an immigrant. And so much of talking to him about his experience in voting and everything is the frustration and feeling that voting was not for him, or it was not built for him, because even though if he cared, the massive amount of information that was coming out was not necessarily made accessible, and it didn't always feel like voter guides were made for him mm-hmm. as well, because they're only oftentimes in one other language, if they're in another language at all. And so it's really great to see all these different languages come out so that we recognize the complexity of what our community is, one, and two, just to let people know, like, just because you want to actually read the information in a language that speaks to you, you know, and that is accessible to you, you know, this means that the democratic process is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the voting is for you, because that's definitely something I know between generations and especially within families and communities, just trying to explain to people, this is for you. You know, you are here, you have the right to vote, do it.
Yes.
But we have to make that accessible to people. So in your voter guide, you guys have several different measures that you go over. So and we have basically measures 102 through 106. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed in your voter guide that basically it's vote no on all the measures except for 102. So can you talk a little bit about measure 102?
Yeah, so when we're actually talking about statewide ballot measures, 102 is the only yes, but later we'll talk a little bit more about the Portland area, mm-hmm. Where there are a few more yeses as well. But for Measure 102, we want the communities to vote yes on 102, because that will support affordable housing projects, and it'll increase funding that will allow bonds to be spent directly towards affordable housing units.
Very nice. Something so important here in the Portland area, especially, well, statewide, as we know that, well, rental unit prices are increasing much more exponentially quicker than people's wages are mm-hmm. and such. And so such an important measure to vote on. By the way, have you voted yet?
I actually have not submitted my ballot, but we are collecting ballots at the Apano office, and I plan on doing that next week during our all-staff meeting.
How are you going to do it during the meeting? I actually have my ballot with me here. I received it yesterday. I was kind of worried because I've been noticing this is kind of late. A lot of people have been talking about getting their ballots late right now.
Yeah.
So I'm not the only one, right?
No, not at all.
Okay.
That's like a big thing that we've been finding while we're going out into the community and talking to the neighbors, is that people haven't had their voter pamphlets available weeks ahead. And by providing them with like a voter guide, it kind of gives them a chance to do their own research and to be informed on what we'll actually see and mm-hmm. what the words and what's trying to be put across, rather than just getting the week of. Everybody says they'll do their research, but really we're not really allowed that much time to go in depth with that.
So true. I mean, I only got my voter official voter guide from the city there maybe a week ago,
mm-hmm.
and it is dense reading and is not complete. I will say that, you know, it's only the information that is provided by whomever wants to provide the information. And so it's so helpful to have organizations such as Apano provide even more information, research information, because let's face it, the voter guides, you know, the pamphlets that are provided by the city and by the state are providing information that is, you know, biased from the different groups that are either opposing or in favor. And it can get dense and it can get confusing. So we have measure 102, the housing measure. Let's go just kind of through the measure real quick. So measure 103, why does Apano oppose 103?
Yes, so measure 103 is really one of those confusing measures that may sound good at first, but it's incredibly misleading. Measure 103 is trying to change the state constitution to ban taxes on grocery sales. And again, this sounds good, but it's misleading. The measure is being pushed by large grocery chains and big businesses who will be getting a break from this tax ban. It's very vague what the ban will actually do and how it can be applied. The ban goes beyond just sales and also bans taxes on the distribution, the processing and delivery, everything to the grocery store, that entire process. And whenever we make changes to the Constitution, we should have clear policies that respond to what is needed. And this measure is really unnecessary at this time, and it's written in a way that's not clear enough to know what the risk and outcomes of this measure will be. So by voting no, we are actually protecting ourselves from the unknown and what's not clear in that measure.
Like so many measures, 103 seems like one of those kind of things where they're the people who are trying to push for it are kind of throwing out these things that seem really good mm-hmm. for the consumers. And if we just look at it on that surface level, it seems like, oh, okay. But as you're saying, when we kind of dig into it more, we find that it's more of the corporations mm-hmm. That will be seeing the benefit.
Yeah. And it, like I said, it's unnecessary and it's really misleading in the way that it's written. So we don't want that confusion to be a problem later down the road.
And then what about Measure 104? It requires a 3/5 legislative majority for any bills, quote, raising revenue.
Yeah, this measure is also unnecessary as well, which is why we want folks to vote no on this measure. The legislators have to have a 3/5 majority to pass anything related to tax and revenue. And that's unnecessary because our Constitution already has a 3/5 requirement. And this measure helps protect tax loopholes because it would require simple fees like state parks or state board of nursing fees to be voted on. And it would make government less efficient because it would become more difficult to respond to our community's needs when we're trying to provide funding for our services and programs. And it would also make it difficult to fix our state budget and tax system. Instead, this measure would help protect tax loopholes for big businesses and politicians.
Doesn't sound like elections at all. Just kidding.
Yeah, Measure 103 and 104 are definitely more of the tricky ones.
Yeah, 104 is one of those measures that is one of those things where I think, okay, here we have some bureaucracy going on. There'll be an increase, and then, oh, who is benefiting from this, right? Again, it's kind of like 103 where you have like the larger corporations, and mm-hmm. that's ultimately who is going to be benefiting from it. And yeah, it's frustrating to hear when certain measures are going to possibly be cutting into services for our community if they pass. And so there's Measure 104. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about Measure 105?
Measure 105, this is a really big one that Apano has been pushing for.
Yeah, it affects our sanctuary system, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, Measure 105 would get rid of the separation between our local police acting like agents of ICE. It's a dangerous ballot measure that's been put on by nationally identified hate groups here in Oregon. The Common Sense Anti-Racial Profiling Law, which has been being referred to as our sanctuary law, was actually created to help lower the amount of racial profiling that was happening in Oregon 30 years ago. If this is passed, the amount of racial profiling in Oregon would increase, and police would be able to look at someone, point at them, and ask them for verification of their legal status. We know that this means profiling people who sound different or look different than what Oregonians are used to would also increase. And this measure could increase racial profiling because police could round up and arrest anyone simply because they look like an immigrant. And many police are also against this measure because it hurts the trust between local police and the community. If we have less trust in the community, they'll be less likely to call the police when they actually need help. And our local resources are already thin, and this would even further thin out our resources for our local police if they have to implement federal policies. There's already people who are doing this job, and our local law enforcement shouldn't have to take on that burden as well. So it's important for us to listen to those who are actually on the front lines and who will be forced to implement these policies, but also protecting our communities who would be most vulnerable during this time.
And especially for AAPI communities, it's so important to be talking about this, because something I think often many people outside of the AAPI community don't realize is how many immigrants and undocumented people we have in our communities here. We're kind of this hidden community here in Oregon. And so this very much affects the AAPI community. And so definitely one to read more about, to learn more about, and to understand why Apano is in opposition to this one. And then what about Measure 106?
Yeah, Measure 106 would limit access to reproductive health services like abortions by changing our Oregon Constitution to ban the use of public funds to pay for this service. That means that the Oregon Health Plan and Medicaid cannot provide those services through public funds. And this affects over 230,000 women and public employees who are on the Oregon Health Plan and Medicaid. So we must vote no on Measure 106 so that women of every background can have equal access to the treatment that they need. This could start a dangerous path that allows policymakers to choose which healthcare coverage can be covered by Medicaid. If this passes, we will be allowing our Constitution to tell women what they can and cannot do to their bodies. So that's why we want people to vote no on Measure 106.
And so those are our statewide ballot measures that we just went over there, measures 102 through 106. And right now, if you're just tuning in, we are talking to Brandon Cruz from Apano, and we're talking about Apano's voter guide that they have for our upcoming election on November 6th. If you still haven't voted yet, there's still time, right? We can, we're in the great state of Oregon where I say the great state of Oregon because sometimes I wonder that, but the one thing I do really enjoy about living in Oregon is the voter system. It is that we can mail in, or you can just put it in the drop box, that we don't have to go to a polling station, and that it's just something that's sent to your home. As we were just talking about it a little bit ago, that I just received my ballot, and this seems to be something that's happening a lot with this round of elections, is that a lot of people are receiving their ballots later, they're getting their voter guides late. Brent, do you happen to know what do people do if they haven't received it yet, but they are registered and they should have received a ballot? Is it too late for people to receive a ballot? What should they do?
Yeah, not at all. Some people are actually still receiving their ballots, which is totally normal. But as I mentioned before, like, this doesn't give you a lot of time to do the research that you want. And my best piece of advice would be to go to your local elections office and call them and ask them why you haven't received their ballot yet. And they can go through and ensure that you were registered and check your registration status and make sure that you do get your ballot.
Because it is too late to register to vote, right?
Yes. The deadline for voter registration for this election was October 16th.
But if, let's say someone didn't register, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
It's still important, though, right? I think it's still important for people to stay engaged and to understand.
Yeah, definitely. A big part of being civically engaged is going beyond just voting and having conversations with your neighbors and your friends about these everyday ballot measures that will affect our everyday livelihood. And I think that's one of the things that we have been doing specifically for the Asian and Pacific Islander communities, and framing it away so that it's understandable and talks to their values.
So whether or not you have your ballots, you can still be getting engaged. You can still be reading your voter guides. You can be looking into all these measures. And for people who maybe are more of the tech-savvy folks and are like, I don't need no piece of paper, where can they find the Apano voter guide?
Yeah, so you can find the Apano voter guide online at apano.org. And if
that's
you
spelled at
APANO.org. And you can find our voter guide there, and you can also find the latest updates on all of our events and our volunteer opportunities on how you can become more civically engaged.
Well, also talking about civic engagement here, let's continue through the voter guide, because we just went through the state measures there, but you also have some local ballot measures here in your voter guide. And listed, you have three measures which you all endorse as being yes. So why don't we talk about your yes on M26-199? And that's the one that approves a $652.8 million bond to fund construction investment of affordable housing.
Yeah, that's very similar to Measure 102 in its purpose, but that will be specifically for the Portland metro area. We know that there are certain areas in Portland that have definitely been disinvested with throughout time, and this is one of the ways that we can ensure that we bring attention and resources back to the communities who haven't had that for so long. So we want people to vote yes, that way we can bring those resources back to the communities who do need our help.
Since we know we have lots of developers and such who promise all sorts of affordable housing, and at the end of the day, we just need to have some systemic change that actually allows for affordable housing. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, and I think a good thing about these measures as well is that a lot of community partners would be involved throughout this process. It talks about non-governmental agencies being involved. So you see certain groups and organizations like Apano who are very much invested with that process and will be able to determine where those resources go.
So what about M26-200, the limits on political campaign contributions?
Yeah, so a lot of the times when people talk about politics, this is actually what deters them from being involved, is because they feel like they have no real power. Mm-hmm. And that's because these large corporations come in and give absurd donations to certain campaigns, which kind of sets the tone that I'll give you money now, you do me a favor later.
All the back scratching.
Yeah, exactly. And if we limit the amount of money that can go into a campaign, then everybody's on an equal playing field and everybody is given equal attention. And we really allow our communities to speak and provide resources for campaigns and candidates who actually are representative of the community.
So you guys are endorsing it as a yes?
Yes.
Wow, can you imagine that if we could limit campaign money? Because definitely here in Portland, we can feel that in the API community as a very small community. It's very easy to feel disenfranchised because here we are as a small community having to pull our funds together to have any sort of influence, you know, while we have these very large corporations that have a lot of influence here in the city. You won't maybe mention names. It might rhyme with Mikey. But so, you know, to be having those discussions about how we can have these very large corporations be able to have so much more influence than communities that are really affected by those kinds of choices. Hey, nationwide, maybe we can start here in Portland, maybe we can go bigger. So then the last local ballot measure that you guys talk about in your voter guide is the yes on M26-201, and that requires retail companies earning over $1 billion nationally and $500,000 locally to pay additional charge of 1%.
Yes, absolutely yes. We want people to vote yes on the Portland Clean Energy Initiative. This is designed to make a fund that would support clean energy jobs and providing clean energy to homes such as solar panels and re-weatherization of homes, which typically isn't accessed by folks of low income status. Mm-hmm. And by making the 1% pay a small 1%, we can allow for our communities to access these resources more equitably. And it's been put on a focus for communities of low income and communities of color, where these projects will be designed.
That would be amazing, because as we know, as so much you know, of our environmental problems, the burden ends up falling on communities of colors, marginalized communities, where you have so much environmental racism and just a disproportionate negative impact. So to be able to have clean energy jobs being built, one for the communities where you have jobs, wow, jobs in Oregon, and then also be able to give back to communities that are the ones being disproportionately affected would be that'd be kind of amazing. So you have all these measures here in your voter guide. And then if you also go online to apano.org, you guys do have candidates that you have endorsed.
Yes. So one of the biggest races right now in Oregon is our governor's race. We have Kate Brown going against Newt Buehler. And Apano has always been alongside Kate Brown. She has always had a history of voting with our values and has always been an advocate for the most vulnerable communities in our state. Apano chooses to vote for Kate Brown because she has fought for our immigrant communities to keep families together and to provide access to health care for all children by passing Cover All Kids. This allowed health care to be accessed by all children, regardless of their citizenship. And she's also worked on improving our schools and expanding access to skill training for local jobs that have good pay and good benefits. And Kate Brown has also been a huge supporter for reproductive justice and women's health. When she passed the Reproductive Health Equity Act, Oregon became one of the best states for reproductive justice. And Kate Brown has also fought for our environment by eliminating coal power from Oregon by 2040 and passing clean air standards. So whether it's been the environment, our schools, or our immigrant communities, she has definitely been a good advocate and support for Apano.
And any other statewide candidates that you guys are endorsing?
Not in the governor's race, but here in Portland, we are endorsing Joanne Hardesty for Portland City Council. Joanne has been working with Apano for a long time, and she's actually one of the big supporters of the Portland Clean Energy Initiative. And she has always been committed to respond to the community's needs. Joanne has been a longtime community activist with her past work as a president of the NAACP. And she has also been a part of Pro-Choice Oregon, Political Action Committee, Human Solutions, Compassions and Choices of Oregon, and the World Affairs Council of Portland. And Joanne always relies on concrete data to support her decisions, while also keeping in mind how this will affect the most vulnerable communities in Portland. And Joanne has the experiences that we need for Portland City Council, and she will ensure that the voices who are often left out of these important conversations will be heard and will be involved more with Portland.
And then I notice on your website you do have some state representatives and senators that you guys have also endorsed. And, you know, we're running out of time here together, so I want to make sure we get in all the important information. So if you want to see who Apano is endorsing as a candidate, once again, you can go on to apano.org, and that's APANO.org. Apano is standing for the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. They're based here out of Portland, Oregon. And so just so we get all the details again for everyone to remember that your election is coming up on November 6, 2018. But of course, here in Oregon, since we have mail-in ballots, you need to make sure to mail it in that before that date if you're going to be mailing it in. Mm-hmm. If you are going, because it needs to be there at the office by November 6th to be counted, right? Because some people put it in their mailbox on November 6th. You need to make sure you go to one of those drop boxes.
Yes.
If it's too late to mail.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we're also offering at Apano, is if you're getting really close to that deadline and you are in the Southeast area, you can come and drop it off to our office at 2877 Southeast 82nd Avenue, right off of 82nd and Division. And essentially, right now is the time for you to fill out your ballots, seal in the envelopes, and send it off. But if you run out of time or you do want ballot assistance, you're more than welcome to come into our office and we'll help you with that. And we also will have in-language assistance available throughout the day.
And so just again to remind everyone that the Apano election guide is available online on their website, and it's available in Russian, Tagalog, Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, Chinese, and English. You can find Apano on the socials at Apano News. You can definitely find them on the Facebooks and the Instagrams and Twitters. Is that where you guys are available? Okay.
Yes.
And then just if you are looking for official city information regarding your ballot, any of the voters' pamphlets, you can go to multco.us. And if you did not receive your ballot by yesterday, according to the city, they say to give them a call at 503-988-3720. And go online again to multco.us if you want to hear that or see, find that phone number, find the locations of drop boxes where you can go. And there's so much info out there, so we really appreciate organizations like Apano trying to help us all understand and grasp what is going on in our community and how all these measures and the candidates and everything that's going on affects our AAPI community in Oregon, across the state, here locally. Brandon Cruz, really, really appreciate you coming in today and talking about the voter guide.
Yeah, we really appreciate being able to be on the air, being able to talk to more voters and to really get their time and their attention, because these ballot measures are very important. Our candidates are very important, and we must turn out the vote so that we control where Oregon and our lives go beyond this election.
Brandon Cruz from Apano, that's the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. So October is Filipino American History Month. And how is Portland celebrating it? Well, last Wednesday, Portland City Hall held an official proclamation for the month of October as Filipino American History Month, and to also celebrate the accomplishments and contributions of the local Filipino community. They presented a proclamation where Mayor Wheeler and the city commissioners and FACE, the Filipino American City Employees Affinity Group, met. So what's an affinity group and what is even a city proclamation? Well, producer Kat Batuigas recently talked to Matt Lynn to learn all about it. And Matt is a city employee and one of the members of FACE. We'll also be hearing a little bit more about Matt's story of how he ended up in public service. So let's hear from producer Kat Batuigas.
Hi, everyone. It's Kat. And on Pacific Underground today, we have Matt Lim. Matt is a developer and data scientist with the City of Portland. He's also involved with the affinity group FACE, and that stands for Filipino American City Employees. And we'll definitely hear more about that in a little bit. So Matt, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. So how I actually, or why I decided to reach out to you, was because I saw you post in a Facebook group, and you had mentioned the FACE affinity group and being a City of Portland employee. And I had thought, oh, I know nothing about those things, so that is probably going to be interesting for us to learn about. So I guess to get started, could you tell us a little bit of Tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got started in that.
All right. You had said earlier, I am a data scientist and I am a developer at the City of Portland. I work for the Bureau of Technology Services. So basically what I do is I work with data, big data. My primary function is maintaining and developing our SAP systems, and basically that's just like a huge platform that looks at all the data that city has, more or less, like our big like data sets. So, you know, for instance, if anyone pays like a water bill, that data has to be stored somewhere, it has to be maintained. So that's part of like the large swath of data that I am responsible for. And my main role within the enterprise group is reporting, so analytics. And that's kind of my jam right there. So yeah, basically we maintain the SAP system, we get requests for different dashboards, reports, whatever, some analyses. I actually do a lot of work for the Office of Equity and Human Rights for their analyses. I've done studies like gentrification studies, just all sorts of stuff. So. Yeah, and how I got there. Kind of a little bit by accident, to be honest with you. I started off in computer science. I went to Carnegie Mellon for my undergrad there. And then I got my master's in data and information science at Carnegie Mellon as well. But I really wasn't like thinking about public service at all. That's something that hasn't crossed my mind. But the way that the school is structured, it's IS is lumped together with public policy, and then BI is like lumped with the business school. And so I got a lot of exposure to, you know, public sector work, public service. I thought it was cool. So, yeah, I jumped right in. So, yeah, and that's why I'm here.
Cool. And so did you go into, you know, data science, like specific kind of work right out of school? Or is this, you know, kind of job function that you do now? Is this something that's a little bit more new for you?
Well, so that's a little bit complicated. So when I was going to school, mainly my goal was to be an algorithm developer. So one of the things that I specialize in is deep neural networks. So, you know, you have stuff like, you know, Google has like Deep Dream, whatever. What do they call that? They
have some I know weird what you're name. Talking about. Yeah.
The Google stuff.
The name is
the
like,
Google.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I kind of want to do that. You know, all my classmates, you know, they went to like Deloitte, Google, Apple, all that stuff. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something a little different. I'm not going to work for the man. I'm going to work for the people instead. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's why I'm in Portland now.
Cool. And that's really interesting. In terms of, you know, what the city of Portland is doing with this data, hopefully, I would imagine, making data-driven decisions and all that stuff, would you say that this is, kind of now a common thing for local governments to do? Or, where's Portland in that sort of general kind of space?
Oh,
are we doing okay? Like, are we, like, trailblazers?
I mean, we're certainly trying. So
okay.
I will say that. I would say the main challenge... First, I'll say this... I would say, given the resources that a lot of municipalities have, they're doing a great job because it's just so hard to keep up with, the private sector on anything tech. Fortunately, there are individuals who do work in the public sector who are very skilled individuals and who really help move that ball. Now, the second thing I would add, why Portland is so unique in regards to bringing its IT infrastructure and data infrastructure to the 21st century is that we're a commissioned form of government, right? And so, you know, the mayor essentially is just a glorified council member. And so everything has to get voted on by the council. So we have something called siloing. So like, you know, just because transportation needs this type of like tech system built, that doesn't necessarily mean the technology bureau is on board with that necessarily because of competing resources, because we're all separate. So that's the biggest challenge for us, is finding some sort of unifying force or body to be able to delegate like all these initiatives, I guess you could say. So
that's really cool. Me being, you know, a relatively recent transplant to Portland, I have to say that I don't know much about the local government at all. So I think it's really cool to be able to sort of chat with someone who is sort of working and involved in that. So that's really awesome. And I had mentioned FACE earlier. It's an affinity group. Could you tell us a little bit more about what that means?
FACE is an affinity group. So the structure to how that hierarchy works is a little complex. And so at the very top level, you have the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And that's basically its own like little mini bureau within the city. It's autonomous. Below that, they have this program called DEEP. And what DEEP is, it's a program that, now this is entirely volunteer-based, and you know we don't get paid for any of this, where if employees want to form some sort of affinity group, whether it's based off ethnicity, lifestyle, like we have like a veterans group, we've got LGBTQ group, we've got the Latinx group, all that sort of stuff. Basically, DEEP gets a certain amount of funding from the city, from OHR, on a regular basis, and they take that pool of money and they just spread it around the different affinity groups. And the affinity groups get to decide what type of events they hold. So they could hold a bunch or none, I guess. Why would you do that? But yeah, so yeah, that's basically how it works.
And so for FACE specifically, is that something that's kind of more recent? I should say that I had never heard of it until I saw you post on Facebook. So yeah, is that and how did you get involved with that?
Oh man, that's gonna be a long story too. Okay, nice. So okay, so FACE, yeah, actually FACE was the very first affinity group within the city. So you know, because us Filipinos, we like to, you know, we like to work it, right? So, so yeah, so you know, it was the first affinity group. It's been around for the longest time. We've had lots of shifts in leadership since then, and the story of how I got involved with the group, because I didn't know they existed too before I had more or less joined, but I actually was one of the co-founders of another affinity group within the city. We're called HOPPY, and that stands for Hapa Asian and Pacific Islanders of Portland. So yeah, so I was a committee member on that organization for about 2 years. And you know, with work, like things have been getting crazy lately, so I had to kind of step down a little bit and finally step away from the organization recently. And one of the old committee members on that HOPPY group, well, two of them, they left for FACE to do more work with FACE, and that's how I kind of learned about it. And then recently we had a leadership shift. Our fearless leader, Linda, had moved, and so there was a gap, and basically I wanted to kind of help out with that, because at the end of the day, you know, you gotta look after your fellow Pinoy, right? So
wait, so are you like in charge? however you
no,
call
don't,
it.
No, don't let people hear that. No, they'd be like, what? No, that's news to me. No, it's kind of like a shared responsibility with the committee. We have a leadership committee.
Okay.
But we do have one chair, and yeah, I'm going to go drop her name now because I guess I promised, I guess. Teresa Suico, she's actually the leadership chair. So she and I just do a lot of work making sure that we get a good amount of events organized throughout the year, make sure that we raise awareness about equity initiatives, specifically those that are targeting AAPI communities. And yeah, you know, just trying to let people know that Filipinos exist and that we're not that we're proud of who we are and that we refuse to be invisible. So yeah.
Cool. Is it a large group? I guess I'm just trying to imagine, like, what is this group even like?
yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, you know, who's officially a part of the group, it's more or less all the Filipinos in the city. Mm-hmm. So we've got about, like, I think on the D list, we have about 30 people. And I would say active membership, probably about half of that, because, you know, people, yeah. Man, being flaky, well, well, okay, I didn't say that. That's fine. Anyway, yeah.
So it sounds like you engage with the larger sort of maybe Filipino or API community in the Portland area as well. What types of, events or what are some things that that FACE does in that regard?
So a lot of the events that FACE has held in the past has mostly been about supporting the local Filipino community and, you know, just trying to develop and I guess you could say lift up the people, so to speak. So we did a lot of networking events, you know, a lot of cultural awareness events and things like that. Now, this was before I had officially joined the committee. But I think moving forward, the type of events we want to do, and I'm going to talk to Teresa about this, obviously. Sorry, Teresa. We want to kind of focus more on what's currently happening, you know, in our communities. Like, for instance, one event that I helped organize for HOPPY that we just had was an immigration event, basically. It was like a lesson, lunch, and learn sort of thing. So we had, like, lawyers, immigration lawyers who are working on the Sheridan cases come talk to us about, like, what the current state of immigration is, what are the pitfalls, you know, the type of resources and support you could reach out to. So generally, I think that's kind of where FACE wants to go. Now I'm just speaking from my own ambitions with FACE. But I feel like that's kind of the general direction a lot of the affinity groups are taking because of you know, the hostile national climate at the moment. So, yeah.
And in terms of, you know, just working and engaging with the Filipino community, how have you found it so far? And I don't know if we've talked about this or mentioned this on the segment so far, but you are a transplant as well, right?
That's right.
So how has it been? What's your experience been like, sort of, you know, working with the Filipino community? How does is it a big part of your life here in Portland, so to speak?
Yes, but it's more a very recent development. I will say this, growing up, there weren't a whole lot of people of color where I'm from. I'm from Oklahoma. And so, yeah, a lot of mayonnaise going on there. I didn't really have a lot of exposure to other Filipinos until I was in high school. And so basically throughout my post-high school life, more or less, you know, my culture, my heritage hadn't really been on my mind at all. You know, I was just really focused on my career and just like immediate things. But when I started doing work for the Office of Equity and Human Rights through BTS, that's when I guess you could say it was a second awakening, right? Like a cultural awakening. I also saw Hamilton that year, so that also kind of helped out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Which year was this?
This was 2016, but I also saw the Hamilton show I saw was earlier this year.
Oh, okay. So, All right.
It was kind of like, you know, succession. But yeah. Okay. Yeah, George Washington was Korean. That was pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah. Wait, where was it, the show here in Portland?
Yeah, Keller Auditorium.
Okay. I had seen the show. When was it? I want to say 2017. Yeah, so like last summer of 2017 in Chicago.
Oh.
And this was before I had moved from Connecticut to Portland. So up until then, I had been trying to score tickets to like the Broadway show, right? Which was impossible.
Oh, yeah.
Joined the lottery like every day for a while, and then I got tired of it because I never got it. And then I was in Chicago. I was going to be in Chicago for a work event, and so I checked out the tickets. They were quite a bit more affordable, still not cheap, but you know, totally worth the money. Hamilton's great. Anyway, sorry.
It's all good. No, it's a good play. Did you get the soundtrack right after you saw the play?
I had listened to the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
For a really long time before I even got to the actual show.
I like to go in cold. So.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know. Or I've heard of a few people who like did it that way. Mm. I had actually seen the show. I had gone to the show with my partner, and I think he hadn't listened to the soundtrack at all as well before going to the show. And so after that, he's still not a Hamilton head, but I think he really enjoyed it. And I know he's listened to the soundtrack a bunch of times after the show. So
Good.
Yep. Very wide appeal. Just great show in general. Didn't catch the one in Portland. I thought about it, but figured.
You already saw it, right?
Yeah.
Better save the money.
Yeah.
By the way, the show is now about Hamilton now. So.
sorry, so we were talking about
Filipinos, yes.
Yes, and like what your sort of experience was kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Before.
Before we went off that tangent. Yes. Well, Hamilton's always a great tangent. You know, through my equity work, I started getting more hashtag woke. I started getting more involved with the community. I started going to a lot of the Apano events, Rolling Tides conventions, stuff like that. With my work when I was with Hopi, you know, we do a lot of work with the different communities and the different groups like Apano, Urko, stuff like that. That's kind of like my story of how I got involved with all this. It's just purely by accident.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oklahoma.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, if you're comfortable with sharing this or talking about this, and since October is Filipino American History Month, did you happen to have, you know, any sort of personal as you want to get?
Yeah.
Personal stories kind of related to that, you know, about your family or, you know, how your family even got to Oklahoma. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a little story that I thought of the other day. This is from my father's perspective. They moved to the United States, my parents, in like the 70s. My dad did his residency in New York City. My parents actually lived in the Bronx when they first came here. And my parents actually came to this country with, I think it was just like $50 in their pocket, and that was it, and clothes on their backs. And so, like, when my dad was doing his residency in New York City, like, the first day was just terrible. Culture shock, everything. He told me, like, you know, after every shift, he would, like, you know, go to, like, the break room and just, like, have a good cry, you know, get all out and go back out there and do his thing.
Wow.
So, yeah, so, like, you know, this kept happening, and, like, he had to take his driver's test, and he was just so fed up with, like, having to deal with all the, you know, all the stuff you have to when you move to a new country that, you know, after he took the test, he knew that he kind of like messed up a little bit, so he kind of left a $20 bill in the little booklet that you're supposed that the instructor brings with them when they drive, and so he left it in there, and then I think it was like a few days or whatever, whenever they give you your license after you take the test, he got it, and my mom was surprised. She's like, "You drive like a maniac. How did you get your license?" He's like, "Oh, you know, I just forgot a 20 in, you know, the booklet, and yeah, there was it." And then my mom was like, "You bribed him." And my dad's like, "No, I just left it there, and he happened to have found the lost 20 and decided not to return it." So yeah, there's a story right there. Sorry, Dad.
And so they had moved to the Bronx from the Philippines?
Straight from the Philippines.
And this was in the 70s.
Yes.
So
lots of disco dudes all around, yes.
Marcos era.
Yes, yes.
If we want to sort of connect that with the broader kind of history that was going on there, you know, I think it was around that time, maybe a couple or so decades after the war, when a lot of sort of Filipino professionals started kind of immigrating to the U.S., lots of, you know, healthcare professionals especially. And I'm pretty sure, you know, the Marcos administration, I believe, had like also encouraged that movement. So, yeah, you know, it's your family is certainly, yeah, it's like part of Filipino American history.
It's all the story we share, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. And are they? Is your family still in Oklahoma?
Yeah, I don't know why, but yeah, they're still there.
All right. So, Matt, where or how can we learn more about FACE or these affinity groups?
We actually have. Each affinity group has their own dedicated website on the City of Portland's network, right? So, like, if you go to, I believe it's OHR's website, and there's a section for DEEP. If you drill down there, they have all the different affinity groups. And so we run our own web pages. You know, some of them are better than others. Obviously, the ones I've worked on are better. But, you know, we got dashboards. We got all sorts of things on there. So, yeah, it's a great place not only to connect with, you know, what the different ethnic groups are doing within the city, but it's also a good way to learn about the city in general. For instance, like some of the dashboards that we have, the data that they use is actually demographics data from the American Census and the American Community Survey. And so you can look at stuff like, oh, I want to see where in Portland, they speak the most amounts of like Africanized languages or whatever. So like we have lots of those different types of things. And so you can, you know, learn about us at the city and you can learn about the city in general at these websites. So
I could just go to like the general kind of City of Portland homepage,
yeah.
And I can navigate to the affinity group websites.
You can. Navigation's really tricky. I'll give you a shortcut. If you type in Portland and then Hopi, H-A-P-I, it will bring up the Hopi's website, like probably the first result.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can navigate, like backwards navigate from there. So
I'm sure we can include this in the show notes as well when this kind of goes up on the KBOO website, if that's all right. All right. And since, you know, in the sort of spirit of October being Filipino American History Month, is there anything that, you know, face or any events that you sort of happen to know about that are happening as part of, you know, this month-long celebration, like here around the city?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Actually, we just had an event today. We had a, it's kind of funny, it's a Filipino-themed coloring hour where our committee chair, she actually purchased a lot of these Filipino coloring books. And so she's like, hey, let's have a coloring hour and celebrate being Filipino. It actually was pretty fun. Like, I was very skeptical. I'm like last time I colored, I was like, you know, like five. Like, what is this going to be? But it was really fun. And yeah, it got a lot of people to, you know, show up. You know, those who aren't Filipino, they showed up. You know, they colored. They had like, they had lumpia, pancit. It was great. So yeah, so that was one event we just had. So we also just held the Filipino American History Month proclamation at City Hall. It was on the 24th. It was great. We had a live band. The mayor proclaimed it, you know, the official month. And he, you know, encouraged all Portlanders to also observe the month as Filipino American History Month. So it was great. A lot of people came out. It was amazing. So yeah. And we plan on doing a lot of networking events in the future. We're thinking of partnering with some of the PSU different groups there, and yeah, just reaching out to some of the younger members of the community, and yeah.
Cool, very cool. All right, so a proclamation. Sorry, I don't actually really know what that means. Like, what does that involve actually? Like, is it just like a document someone's reading it out, or?
Well, I mean, technically, yes. The core of the proclamation is when the mayor reads the official proclamation, you know, declaring that month or whatever thing you're dedicating at that moment to be official. And then he hands over the proclamation to the person who's supposed to be receiving. And yeah, and usually involves, you know, either a performance or something, and testimonies. That's the very important thing.
Okay.
So what the testimonies are, you know, it's just like a normal council hearing where, you know, you'll have like three or four people and they'll get like a certain allotted amount of time, like 5 minutes. And they get to talk about whatever they want, you know. And so a lot of people will talk about their experiences, you know, being a person of color or whatever group they're representing. At these proclamations, you know, they'll tell personal stories and, you know, yeah, just share a lot of experiences and celebrate whatever they're celebrating at the moment. And yeah, it's really, I would say, from the proclamations we've had in the past, I would say it's a very positive experience. Everyone who participates gets lifted up. And yeah, it's just a great time overall.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, that sounds really cool. Matt, anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I did promise to do a few shout-outs today. All right. Shout-out to Eric Neville, Shannon Carney. I guess I'll do Jordan Brooklyn, too. Whatever. You get one. Okay. Yeah, that's it.
All right. And yeah, Matt, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Of course.
This was so much fun, and I am so glad to have learned a little bit more about the city and the affinity groups, how to check out. I should check out FACE at some
point. You really should.
yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Well, that was city employee and former member of FACE. We just learned that he had left the group, but is still supportive of it. Matt Lim, city employee, talking to Pacific Underground producer Kat Batuigas there. You can find more information about the city's affinity groups, again, at portlandoregon.gov. So Pacific Underground Collective would like to publicly show support for those in our KBOO community who are in want and in demand of needed systemic change here at our own community radio station. While there are individual volunteers and staff who have shown a support of addressing these issues, we feel that there's a pressing need for the KBOO community as a whole to express their views regarding the radical space we call our radio home. In solidarity, we will now end our show with a moment of dead air.
Time now is almost 12 o'clock exactly. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, October 26th, 2018. In national news, the FBI has arrested a Florida man suspected of sending more than a dozen bombs through the mail this week to top Democrats, celebrities, and CNN. This comes after four more bombs were found Friday morning, this time addressed to Democratic Senator Cory Booker, former U.S. Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, Democratic Senator Kamala Harris of California, and Democratic donor Tom Steyer. The 56-year-old suspect in the case is a white male who owns a van plastered with photos of Trump, American flags, and bizarre right-wing paraphernalia. He's a registered Republican who has been arrested numerous times, including one case in which he was accused of making a bomb threat. Meanwhile, in international news, more indications that the wealth gap between the world's rich and poor continues to widen. According to the annual Billionaires Report published by Swiss bank UBS today, billionaires across the globe increased their wealth by $1.4 trillion last year, which is an astonishing 20% increase. That brings their combined wealth to nearly $9 trillion. During a year in which much of the world faced deep poverty as well as unprecedented extreme weather due to the human-caused climate crisis, the 2,000 wealthiest people in the world raked in more money in 2017 than any other year in recorded history. In more news on wealth disparity, this time in the U.S., the Associated